Some time ago, my friend Mike called me and said,
Steve, I have a message for you. You have to make a podcast. It's very important. Do it now.
And I said, okay, I will. Can you provide me with extra time to do that during my busy schedule? He said he couldn't do that. But then I managed to free up some time. So here's my podcast, Audio Chimera.
This is episode number 6, The Drought of 1966. I read an article some time ago that suggested that people who had lived through a drought as children dealt better with water conservation. And while I don't know if that is true for everyone, I do know it's true for me. In the year 1966, when I was a kid in York, Pennsylvania, we had the worst drought that anyone could remember. Sure, it was probably nowhere near as bad as some of the super drought situations I've heard about in California and the Southeast United States in 2016, but that year, 50 years earlier, seemed pretty bad. It didn't rain for weeks, and temperatures were routinely hitting triple digits. I looked back online, and isn't it cool that we have the facts and data like this literally at our fingertips? And I found temperatures for the first 2 weeks of July. The data is from Harrisburg, but it's close enough, I think. During that two-week span, the average high temperature was 93.2 degrees Fahrenheit, or 34 degrees Celsius. The day before the 4th of July had a high of 102.9, and the day after the holiday, well, my aunt would often call for assistance with the statement, "Oh Lord, why can't we get some relief?" The high temp of 86 degrees Fahrenheit that day must have felt close to that relief. Incidentally, there is no record of appreciable precipitation during this period. On July 15th, rain and drizzle was reported in Harrisburg, but the precipitation amount remained zero for the day. One way we had visible proof that this drought was serious, besides the lawns turning brown and the corn crops looking pathetic, was the lowered water level at the reservoir. The York reservoir tanks were high on the hillside and dug deep into the earth. We used to go to Reservoir Park all the time for picnics or just to hang out and play. Many memorable moments of my childhood occurred there. The rolling hills were perfect for our favorite pastime. We would take cardboard boxes, break them down into flat sleds, and ride them down the grassy hills. We got up to some quite thrilling speeds on those boxes. Then we would trudge up the hill and soar down again. For me, it was better than sledding because, although you had to wait for a significant winter snowfall to go sledding, you could always count on this activity in the spring, summertime, and fall. Except for 1966. With the drought-blasted grass, the cardboard didn't glide as easily as before. So that was a disappointment. And then those water levels? At the top of the hill, looking into those circular man-made lakes, and seeing much more cement than ever, we knew the situation was dire. Of course, we instituted all sorts of water conservation practices. The one that still drives my wife crazy is the, if it's yellow, let it mellow, if it's brown, flush it down situation. I also learned to brush my teeth by using a minimum amount of water. Wet the toothbrush, rinse the toothbrush, and use just enough water to rinse your mouth. One evening, it actually began to rain, just briefly. As the downpour began, we ran out with trash cans, pots, pans, and all manners of containers. The neighbors did as well. We stood soaking in the pouring rain, watching these containers fill, at least a little bit. It was a relatively brief shower, but it felt like a godsend in those dry and dusty days. Almost two decades later, when I first arrived in California, I had to buy duck shoes because of all the rain that year. But then the drought began. A few years later, I got a summer job at Shakespeare Santa Cruz, and that town was also experiencing a severe drought. My accommodations were a room and a bathroom in a house owned by one of the founding members of the SSC. And the quirkiness of that living situation with a toaster oven and broiler sitting on the bathroom counter next to the sink should be added as another podcast story. One of the first instructions I received was to not run the shower for very long and to let the tub fill so I could flush the toilet with that water. Now, I must confess I did not conserve on the shower water. I really needed that hot shower to wake up for my 12 to 14-hour days. But I did manage to flush the toilet on quite the regular basis from the stored-up water in the tub. As I mentioned earlier, I still do as much water conservation as I can, trying to find unique ways to do so. For example, our basement is fairly damp in the summer, and so I'm constantly running a dehumidifier, emptying it at least once a day. And this killed me to just dump out the water. So I wondered if I could use it to water plants. I did a quick Google search and turned up several websites with advice on this topic. Two of the top hits suggested that there would be no problem with this practice, but a third said unequivocally, under no circumstances should one use dehumidifier water on your plants. I looked more closely into the reasons for that and discovered it meant your homegrown marijuana plants. This is on the Normal site, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, and it warned against the accumulation of salts and metals, which I guess would adversely affect your smoking experience. I just wanted to put it on run-of-the-mill house and garden plants. One of the other things I think about when I remember the drought of 1966 was the problem we had with our cardboard sledding on the straw-like grass, and how that practice soon came to an end. One day, someone erected signs that basically said, "Keep off the hills." The signs suggested it was to keep them from being torn up, but our riding down the grass never caused any problems. I'm sure it was done to prevent liability. Probably someone fell down, and rather than worry about future lawsuits, they just decided to stop everyone from having fun. So much has changed from when I was a kid. I rode my bike freely around town with no helmet, and no one ever worried about me getting killed or maimed. It was just a part of growing up. But we also believed in science and climate science and saw what consequences could come from a brief drought. And thinking about some of those issues, I wrote a poem called Childhood's Paradise Lost. Remnants in the ashtray. Smoldering, still smoking. The harshest wisps are choking. Embers and charcoal ashes. Dust and rusty whispers. As a child, I chased the fireflies. I spun in the center of a spark tornado, capturing light itself in my jar. Storing their light for another night, but the glow faded as they died. And today, every June, I walk into my garden to search for them. There's a drizzle on a good night, but never a storm of light. Then I look up to gaze into the night sky, but I see only a grayness where once I saw woven a tapestry of constellations. The diamonds of the sky have lost their luster, starlight paled by the lights of the city and by our brightly glowing handheld screens. Our modern method of capturing that magic light in our hands. But where has that magic light of childhood gone? Anything you want to hear more about from this podcast? I can elaborate. Just send your request to Stephen Schrum at museoffire.com. That's StephenSchrum at museoffire, MUSOFYR.com. Or leave a message at 724-835-4074 and I'll see what I can do. I receive no cash for products I mentioned, but please feel free to throw money at me to advertise here. For more information on my works, check out my website, museoffire.com. For written works, search for me on Smashwords as Stephen Schrum or Museoffire, or find me on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. This is Stephen Schrum. Thanks for listening to Audio Chimera.